when I do get out of bed in the morning, I think, what is it I'm being called to do today? What can I do to be a part of creating harmony, of helping other people? And the hardest of all is, what do I need to be open to today when someone else offers to help me?
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. I'm the producer of this podcast, and I am here with the founder, Clay Boykin. Hi, Clay.
Hi, Dennis.
Would you please introduce our dear friend and dear guest today?
I would love to. I'm thrilled that Jack Frick is here with us. Jack, what can I say? He's a wild man. This guy, we met over at the Unity Church. He's been part of our men's circle for a long time, and he's a man of wisdom, charm, humility, and he really is a wild man. He loves to get out and with his camper and go camping, and he likes the music scene. He can tell you everything you want to know about music in Austin, Texas. And then he's got a day job, but I'm not going to worry about that right now.
Well, that's a whole, you know, Jack, one of the reasons why I wanted to be on this podcast is because I have, as I've gotten a chance to talk with you and meet you and to really to feel the wisdom that you have truly been here when there has been an evolution in the consciousness of men over the course of these years. I'm 72. You're well, somewhere in my range. And then we've got Clay, our little young Clay going along here, pulling along. But we've really seen the evolution in that, and that you've been a big part of it.
Well, thank you. I'm 76 now. And I never think about my age. One time for almost a year, I thought I was a year younger than I was. Somebody said, "How old are you?" And my wife said, "You're not that old." And I said, "I'm not, no." So there has been a huge change. And it is the most exciting time to be alive in my lifetime in terms of seeing something new coming up and emerging.
And so what are you seeing new? What are you seeing that is emerging that is different and is important and valuable? What are you seeing out there, and what are you seeing in the hearts and the minds of the men that you're connected with?
For many men, it is wanting to be more connected. It's more. And of course, I'm influenced by the men in the men's group, and I've seen a big change in myself, and I've seen a big change in other men that are in that group. And then with the COVID crisis and having to be confined, I think it's kind of accelerated it. And I have seen a lessening of ego of men, willingness to share, willingness to trust, not the need to feel so competitive, but how to be cooperative. How can we cooperate again? How can we cooperate more together? And I think women have known many of these things a little bit ahead of us, but that's been the path for myself that I've noticed. And I think maybe some other guys too, many of them.
You know, that's a common theme. You know, we've started this podcast. I've lost count. But to a person, you know, yeah, this is painful, but look what's ahead. And so I appreciate what you're saying.
Me too. And Jack, the work that we're doing on ourselves to build, to work on the word compassion, can you talk about that? Because in your spiritual journey, and all of us, because I think of spirituality, I separate it from religion in thinking of spirituality as purpose. What am I doing here on the planet? And certainly religion can inform and give me a guidance in that path. But when you really talk about that, and you talk about the rise of compassion within you and within, it's truly making a difference on your spiritual journey.
Yeah. You know, Dennis, that's something I've had trouble with getting my arms around. And I think it's been semantics. Never in my life, including now, have I ever got out of bed in the morning and thought, what can I do to be a compassionate man today? And I think I had linked compassion with just being nice, you know, pet puppy dogs and little kids and smiles.
I love it.
Well said, Jack.
That's perfect.
So I've never thought of myself particularly as a compassionate person. But when I do get out of bed in the morning, I think, what is it I'm being called to do today? What can I do to be a part of creating harmony, of helping other people? And the hardest of all is, what do I need to be open to today when someone else offers to help me? And being able, when somebody says, would you like for me to do this or that? So often automatically I say, oh no, I've got it done. And I have to catch myself. And when help is offered, and that to me has been part of the compassionate part, as I've coming to understand it, because I'm helping that other person as much as I'm being helped, and I have to be willing to accept it.
Gosh, I love that. You know, that brings true so much. I got it taken care of. No, don't worry about it. And what have I just done? I've just diminished that other person's intention, good intention, to bring support. And so
exactly.
That cycle of energy exchange, I just cut off right there.
That is beautiful. Clay, could you talk about the compassion as an active principle? I mean, where you were talking about, like, I was like you, Jack, the compassion was this very soft kind of a gauzy, yeah. But you're helping me to understand compassion as a ferocity, as an active principle, rather than just could you talk more about that and help us to on this journey and what you're learning and learning about yourself there?
And that's the whole nature of the journey. You know, I'm in search of the new compassionate male. You know, I can't in one concise sentence say what that is. You know, there's a thousand ways to look at it. And, you know, part of it, to me, love, you know, it's all about love. Mm-hmm. How do I get my arms around that? That's like me trying to grab Jell-O sometimes. Mm-hmm. But love in action, to me, is what compassion is.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You know.
Well put, wow. Clay. Yeah.
Beautifully put.
Love in action.
Those two things, now I got something that I can hold on to. And Jack, what you were talking about, you know, I've got to love myself first. I've got to learn how to be compassionate for myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Because if I'm not compassionate, self-compassion isn't there, how am I going to be compassionate for somebody else? And it's said another way, if I don't love myself, how can I love somebody else?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But again, compassion to me is more of an action-oriented word. That's linked with love.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And I love what you're talking about there, Clay, because I find that I project upon the world my internal landscape. So therefore, if I'm highly judgmental of the world, I'm being highly judgmental of me. It's a very clear, there's a very clear correlation of that. And so therefore, if I'm, it's so important that I work on this first, because if I fix all out there, if I fix everything and try to get everybody to behave or to be, I've never gotten a chance really to be the change that I can in order to be able to be most effective. And that's what we're doing today, Jack, because one of the things that you and I in our 70s, we're in our prime time. This is not, there was a time when we, when I was growing up, when people were in their 70s were put off into you'd go into a rest home and you'd see these wheelchairs just piled up at the doorway. And there'd just be people sitting there. I'm going, is that the best we can do? Well, Jack, Clay, we've obviously answered the question that it isn't the best we can do.
Well, you guys, you old guys have answered the question. I'm only 66.
That's right. This is a baby. Let him. We'll let him get there when he gets there.
But you know, yeah, something, that's one thing I so appreciate about Jack. He's truly an elder to me. And he has been a guide both spiritually and in trying to plan my life.
Yeah.
And sometimes when he says something, it's like, well, that's a blinding glimpse of the obvious. Well, hello, Clay. Why didn't you think of that?
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? But most of the things, Jack, haven't you found in your life that most of the things that whenever I have found a great spiritual truth, it has always been, I knew that. It was always a reminding of what I already somewhere deep inside of myself knew. And that's what you're so beautiful about articulating.
Thank you. And thank you, Clay, for your words. And the feeling is mutual because you have been an awful big help to me. And Dennis says, I have gotten to know you both by what you are and what you do. My respect for you and the things I hear about you from other people who interact with you. It's you make them play taller.
Oh,
if
wow.
You will.
Thank you.
You make them play taller. Make them bat for you.
You know, when we're moving here, when we're looking at this, at the words of diversity, because one of the things that I love about compassion is that it is absolutely inclusive. It must be for all. We cannot otherize make someone an other and have compassion. The two do not mix. So therefore, so at this time when we're when Jack, you and I are in the elders of the tribe as we're doing this, that's part of what diversity truly is. When we're thinking about what diversity is, to allow us to all be part of this, on how we can be part of this process of helping to heal the world, which is what In Search of the Compassionate Male and the Rise of This Archetype is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems like there's always been groups, right from not only this country, other countries. There have been groups, there's been prejudice against, they have been ostracized. For example, my family is German. There was only one person executed at the Nuremberg trials. He was hung. His name was Frick. He was a relative, not a close one, but a distant relative. Mm-hmm. He kept all the records for the Nazi government. And Hitler and others kept telling him to burn the records, but he loved keeping good. He was the ultimate bureaucrat. He loved keeping the records so well that he couldn't bring himself to destroy them. And those were the records that convicted many of the Nazis later on as they were hunted down. And so my family, being German and with the name Frick, they were prejudiced. People looked askance at them, and that's when our family quit speaking German. The Japanese in World War II, they were rounded up and put in camps.
Yep.
And we could go on and on of the different groups, but it seems like there has been, as people become aware of Melting Pot and these groups are brought in, they're given opportunities, and then, you know, rising tide floats all the ships.
Absolutely.
So the overall trend, I think, has been very, very, very good.
You know, Dennis, we talked about this yesterday, you know, Jack's comment about the rising tide.
Yes.
Floats all ships. And the COVID right now, it's almost like that has lowered the tide and it's exposing a lot of rocks that we need to deal with. So it's, you know, it's great that all the ships are rising, and sure, also here we go, an opportunity to make the world a better place and address some of the things that are being, you know, that are out there in the world right now.
And addressing them is so vital because they were impeding the flow, even though that they were down there. We did not realize it. We didn't realize how much they were impeding the flow. But now that we're seeing that, we can take that energy. We can take that compassion, that working together for a better future for all of us, and can end up truly creating this society. Clay, don't you feel like that there's something really systemic that is happening, that there's a shift going on in the world? When you talk with the people around the world, because you're connected in this movement that you founded and that you started, you are literally talking with the edge walkers and the people that are making a difference around the world in this field.
I really feel that, you know, whether it's Malawi or Kenya or Rwanda, Australia, Canada, the United States, Tasmania. We've got Tasmania coming up here in next week or so. There's a lot of stuff going on that's real painful. But the overall is yes and instead of us. Yes and. And I just keeps coming back to me over and over and over again. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to pause and reflect and think more deeply about this. You know, I'm off the front line in one sense because I'm not doing all the travel, but I'm online and it's actually proving to be more effective because I can reach and understand and listen and what's really happening out there. And, you know, it's burning. Each one of us guys have got this burn inside of us that we're trying to hold down. And, you know, that to me is the essence of the divine feminine energy, which is, I think, where the origin of compassion comes from. You know, I told this guys in Kenya, I says, you know, you guys are warriors, but you got your sword there, but you got your other hand tied behind your back. You know, bring it out. Yes, there's a time for a sword, but in that other hand, carry compassion. Yeah. Now you're a complete warrior or a complete man.
You know, I think of the term peace officer. Peace officer. What a lovely idea. What a lovely, in just those two words, when we're talking about the police or we're talking about however, but if we talk about a peace officer, what would that look like? Aren't those two lovely words?
We've lost those. I haven't thought about that term in years.
Maybe that'd be a good cabinet position.
Yeah. Yeah. A minister of peace. Exactly. And on how we can, because this is one of the things that I love about what we're doing is that we're having the conversations that need to be had. And yes, we're having them with those of us who have some like mind or some intention, but each one of us has our own direction and our own challenges and our own paths on how we're doing. But we have to connect. This is no longer the time of the Lone Ranger. This was when I grew up, that was the ethos. It was the Lone Ranger. The one man goes out there and makes all the, and now we know that the only way to do this is in a collaborative, communicative framework, because none of us do it alone.
You know, I want to go back to something, Jack, that you said right in the very beginning. I never viewed myself as a compassionate man. Well, I've witnessed several men whose lives you've changed.
Yeah.
You know,
like me.
Well, I mean, sitting down with, I mean, who was it? I mean, you had somebody that was on their last dollar. They couldn't get a job. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. you'll forgive me if I don't mention a name.
Because that's fine.
Oh, please, no.
Very confidential. No. Person was about to be evicted. He had tapped all the sources that he could, and literally down to being on the street, and he had heard about a technique called the TAB technique that was, and I talked about it, gave a talk on it at the 8 o'clock service at Unity Church of the Hills. And the men's group really showed up there. And that was the largest group ever at that time to have come to the 8 o'clock service.
Yeah.
And so word about that got around. And so he asked me, he said, would you tell me about that?
And the TAB technique. Yeah.
The TAB technique. Uh-huh. And I said, it's very counterintuitive, because friends and family generally, many times in an effort to help, they hinder us and they put a roadblock. For example, I know you can get a job. I know you'll be able to pay your rent. I know that you will be able to do this or that. You know, I believe in you. You've got powers within you. And so this doesn't happen at all. And the TAB technique developed by a Unity minister, Dr. Roth. The approach is, how do you really feel about being evicted? What does it feel like? What will it look like? And so scared, all the negatives that would go on there, embarrassed, failed again. And what are you going to tell others that's helped you? I'm sorry. So then just don't want to talk to others. So on one side of the paper got, how do you feel about this thing facing you? And keep quiet and let it come out. And this comes from the depths.
Mm.
And then on the other side of the paper, what is the opposite of being embarrassed? What's the opposite of being frightened? What's the opposite of being ashamed? So then put the opposite word on the other side. And then use an approach that is extremely powerful, that's got many elements in it, like law of attraction, like quantum physics, like neurolinguistic programming, like self-hypnosis, like rewiring the brain, like getting both hemispheres, all these things in it, but we don't have to know what it is. It's like a child that can flip a light switch, not knowing where electricity comes from, and there's light. And the child doesn't care how it's made, but there's light. And so now, to make a positive affirmation that literally, in a minute or two, can rewire the brain in a way that a therapist maybe could do in months or years of therapy. And so what is important about it, it is starting where the person is with how they really feel, what is the opposite of it, and now personal accountability comes in. So I, Jack Arthur Frick, that's the name my mother used when she wants me to really pay attention. I, Jack Arthur Frick, yep. Totally accept the belief, not hope, not going to try, not I'll do my best, I'll give it my full attention, but I totally, without doubt, accept the belief that. And now it's where we make a declarative sentence using positive words in a calm, confident, relaxed, trusting, way, with God's help, I will apply for and get a job as a result of the interview next Friday at 10 o'clock. So now we've got all the elements of a SMART goal. So it's me, not somebody else. I totally accept the belief that. So how am I going to do it? When am I going to do it? And will be hired. And then how will I feel? I will feel enthusiastic, brimming with joy. And then to end that with, I am grateful, because it's not me. It's God now leading me in a powerful affirmation. And the worst thing, I think, that when I've coached people on how to pass exams, people tell them, well, don't worry, just get in and do your best. So after forming a tab, telling a person not to worry is kiss of death.
That's like standing at the side of a person who's going down for the third time in the middle of the lake and go, don't drown. Yeah. Don't. A lot of help.
Yeah. So take out a 3x5 card, write down this affirmation, carry it in the pocket, start off the day by reading it. That's the program, not the news, but read the affirmation. And then every time worry pops up, worry as much as you want. Worry every 5 minutes if you want. Except every time you worry, you have to get the card out and you have to read it 3 times again. So that is creating a powerful force in the subconscious, bringing the conscious and the subconscious, the left brain, the right brain, creating a new reality. Putting the power out there that is creating new forces that will get us a job, that will help us pass the test, that'll help us have a good podcast, yep, that'll help a person, mm-hmm, you know, make that proposal to his girlfriend that's going to be accepted. One individual said, this doesn't work for me. I said, why? He said, because I've got so much to do. I spend all day reading this card that I'm supposed to pull out. Well, what would you say the solution would be to that? Don't worry so much. Then you don't have to pull it out. So the day that we went into shutdown in Austin, Texas, the very day that the mayor, mm-hmm, shut down Austin and many businesses closed their doors and thousands of people were out of a job in Austin just like that. Well, my friend had a job interview and I thought, oh my gosh, of all the rotten luck. I mean, that flashed through my mind and I thought, physician, heal thyself. So I had to, you know, get some positive
energy. And this is the guy that's about to be evicted.
Yeah. In the next couple of days. Yeah. So guess what? Coincidence, right? He went in, he got the job, he was hired part-time, but they needed work so much, the first week he had 40 hours of work. And just when everyone else around him was out of work. And he gave full credit to that and says that it caused him to think better. And I said, you're the one that gets the credit because you had the courage and the heart to truly believe. And then he has some physical problems, bad knees and so forth. And then he thought, well, maybe he'd like to get a different job, maybe even a better job. So I didn't know about it, but he started using the tab technique, including using it on other situations in his life. He went from one job to another job with even more hours, but now he needed a car. And so he had no doubts that if he got this job and needed a car, that divine providence, spirit, would make provision for a car. It did. After he got the job, just as he was starting, a person, not knowing he needed a car, calls up and was able to get a reliable car, and began making payments on it and drives to work and now can go to different locations. And you might say, well, what an unbelievable set of circumstances. So this is one of the things that changed my life big time, financially, professionally, all kinds of ways. I've taught almost 20,000 students in classroom and online how to take and pass an ACE, an insurance exam, and that will work for any kind of an exam simply by changing the way they think, asking for guidance, and remembering to be grateful.
You know, one of the things, Jack, I want to ask you about, and Clay, and to see what you think, because you mentioned, when you mentioned about the emotions, and what I have, what I've asked myself is that how would I feel if this situation were resolved?
Mm-hmm.
And really dig into that, like you were talking about the positive. So in other words, am I willing to, like people will say, well, oh man, I'm going to feel so much better once I'm through with the exam, or once I'm mm-hmm. over that interview, I'll feel better then. Mm-hmm. And I ask myself, okay, well, why do I not give myself permission to feel better now? I'm literally the one that is holding myself back. And not only that, what I have found is that if I am willing to pre-feel the emotion that I would feel if it resolved itself at its highest level, which is not always what I think it should be, but it's at the highest level for all concerned. If it resolved myself and if I am willing to feel better now, I end up taking the actions and having the experience that works. It's like the oil that oils the machine is my willingness to pre-feel the emotions should this be resolved. Any thoughts on this?
I've got some thoughts on it because when I've tried it early on, I thought, well, who the hell do you think you are, Clay? That you haven't worked hard enough. You haven't accomplished it. So who the hell do you think you are to project success? Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'm going to project failure. How's that working?
Okay. Well, now that.
So it's taking me a little while to learn. But I tell you, you know, I saw this fella, and he's a wonderful guy. But he was this fella Jack you're talking about. I mean, he tried everything. But Jack sat down with this guy and walked through him, looked at his whole everything that he was doing, and just and now this fella's like what Jack said. He's where he's at. Now tell me, is Jack Frick compassionate? You're damn right he is. I mean, that's compassion. That's love in action. So, and I can attest to that story. Every bit of it's true.
Well, that's what I'm, and what I love about what your process is, Jack, is that you really get in there and say that the universe is user friendly. That you yeah. actually, that it actually has, mm-hmm. it has laws. And these are laws that you use. I don't doubt gravity. I don't sit down and try and work out how it is. And what all you're doing and what you're doing and what you continue to do is to apply universal law. This isn't something that we beg the universe for or we try to placate or plead. It's law.
Yeah. You know, it is.
Well put.
Yeah. Jack, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Is that
Do okay? it. Do it. Let's put him on the spot.
You did something recently, something about 40 days. You went on some kind of thing for 40 days. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I had never been on a spiritual retreat that lasted a long period of time. I've never shut myself in. But when the COVID thing came and we were by order having to stay home, whether we wanted to or not, I thought this could be a great opportunity. So I started on April the 10th, which was Good Friday. And so the rock star Jesus came in. People were hailing him as the king. And 3 days later, he was nailed up on a cross and everybody was against him. And this happens, you know, in our life. Yep. So I started 40 days because 40 days would then end 3 days after Easter when Jesus arose and he was seen by his disciples, the Pentecost. Mm-hmm. So that was a 40-day period. And the number 40 in the Bible is used a lot. And I thought, okay, I'm going to explore this, be open. So I started on Good Friday. And so I made a list of everything that I wanted to accomplish in the 40 days. This is a journal I happen to have it out here. And so here's all the things I wanted to do. There was one thing like learn to be a better person, you know, build myself from the inside, but that was a very minor thing.
Check that out.
Oh yeah, by the way.
First 15 minutes, got it done.
Yeah. And one of the goals is I wanted to make $40,000 more in the next 12 months than I made the year before. Mm-hmm. So 40 days, $40,000 of new money. So that was a goal. So I kept a journal every day. I was not familiar at this time with The Artist Way and Morning Pages, which gotten my attention because I've heard Clay refer to that a number of times. But I kept a journal. Not one of my goals was completed. I couldn't put a check mark by any one of these things that says I did it. And I was so confident that I was going to come out of it with a lot of successes and so forth that I was in Marfa and I bought a journal and I was saving it for something really special. And Marfa, people come from all over the world because of the mysterious lights. And when you try to look at the lights, they disappear. When you look to the side, the lights come in focus. And they've been noted since the 1800s when the cavalry was under. So I got this book, Marfa, Mysterious Light, they'll come into my life. And I'm going to write down the secrets of the universe if they come. So nothing. Well, on day 39, I wrote down, scratched it out and so forth. I wrote down something that finally came to me that seemed to make some sense, you know, big picture, because I couldn't understand why I was blocked on getting a lot of these other things done. And then I wrote another copy of it. And then I wrote some more on day 39. And so I felt truly that I had gotten, for me, the keys to the universe. What is the universe? How does it work? Who am I? What am I? What am I to do? How do I do it? And when do I do it? And I was elated. And then, surprise of surprise, I didn't need my book because I got all that on 2 3x5 cards. So that was pretty succinct. And I did then put it in the Marfa Journal. And so I got from Mr. Waddles The Science of Growing Rich, which to me, he said it better than any book I've ever read about what is the universe. This is before quantum physics. This was about 1917. He nailed it right on the head on what is the nature of the universe. One of the most important things that causes a shift in the thinking of all of us. And here's what he says. There is a thinking stuff from which all things are made, and in its original permeation, it penetrates and fills the interspace of the universe. A thought in this substance produces the thing imagined by this thought. Man can form things in his thought, and by imposing his thought upon the form, has substance and cause the thing that he thinks about to become. So thought in the universe. And then I was reading a book on quantum physics, and they said, well, it's thought of the universe as being void. And it was not until the space station went up and man walked outside of the space station that man first smelled space. Nobody ever thought, what does space smell like? Space feels like electrical burning wires from the electricity that pops and comes into being, and it disappears in a millisecond of all of the space that is out there. And so here's somebody saying space is alive and our thought can influence it. So what is the universe? It is something that we can have an effect on by our thought. So that was the big picture. And when I started writing, I remembered that I had read this someplace, and I thought, find it. So I found it quickly, and I wrote it down. So that's the big picture. So who am I, and why am I here? I wrote this in about no more than 5 minutes after it came to me on day 39. Not to do, but to be. It is through the being that the doing gets done. I do not seek to transform the world, but to transform myself. And then I may be some small part of transforming the world. April 2020. And then I put down below, it's about showing up. So who am I? Why am I here? And then, when do I do it? So that's what I need to be. I want to be, not need to. I wish. When do I do it? I do it now. Yesterday is gone. This came in not more than a minute. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow will never come. Now is here and will be here forever.
Oh.
And then, with that framework, the final piece was, I'm up, I'm moving about today, how do I make this a reality in my life? Here's how to win for me. Win the minute, which is the now. Gain the hour, which is made up of winning minutes. Secure the day, cherish the week, savor the month, be grateful for the year because of the winning minute. And then I thought, you know, that sounds familiar. And I went back in my journal, and almost 5 years before, where I made notes in a men's group, almost this exact thing came to me in a men's group, and I wrote it down and had kind of forgotten about it. And so that was the final piece I need. So that was as a result of my 40 days. And I don't think this would have been this transformation. This would have been possible I went on a mental and spiritual diet. I lost 15 pounds. Then I lost 20. Then I lost 25. So I came out of it 25 pounds later. I could do 5 push-ups going in. I did quite a bit more on day 40. I actually, on day 40, did 40 push-ups.
Wow.
The last 5 were pretty shaky, but I wanted to do 40 push-ups on day 40. That was my goal. So this was a total immersion for me, and the men's group played a big part of it because I listened to other men. I started making appointments with several fellas to meet by phone during this period of time. And if anybody's ever considering doing that, I can say it certainly worked for me.
Wow.
The thing that impresses me about this is your day 37, is your day 38. The idea is you don't quit before the miracle, and you keep coming back. That just so inspires me.
You got to write that down. Don't quit before the miracle.
Well, and so what comes to me, Jack, is that the things that you wrote down, that you mind mapped out there so beautifully, and you said you really didn't accomplish those things, it was almost like you had to put those things out of your mind so that you could look at the bigger picture.
Exactly, Clay.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to the concept of the morning pages, you know, just write. It's like fleshing your mind out so that you can get fresh thoughts in there, see what's going to come through.
Yeah. Very well put, Clay.
Well, Dennis, I think Jack is one of the most compassionate men in the world.
It is to me. I mean, this is what the power of you, Jack, in my life, the influence that I feel from you, from your practice, from your modeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're doing. Like all great teachers, they say, follow me. Let me show you first. I will do the work. I will do it. I will demonstrate for you, as opposed to stand on the sidelines and tell you what you should do. You demonstrate it first. And I know of no teacher whom I have wanted to follow or who has done that has taught any other way. And that's one of the things that I so respect about you.
Thank you.
What have we not said today that we need to say today, Jack? What's on your heart, on your mind, that is going on in this time?
To me, it would be gratitude. And the more that I can recognize people when they do something or a conversation or a word, to be able to send a text, to take the time maybe to send a note. And I have been so remiss in expressing my gratitude for things. And I'm still learning how to do a better job at that. I took the physician assistant that takes care of me at the endocrinologist. I took her a little gift card for Whole Foods. And she was just shocked. In fact, she had the assistant go out, take me out, and weigh me again. And she said, are you sick? And I said, no. And so I gave her the card and I said, this is to you because you gave me ideas on diet and so forth. And I took it to heart. She said, this is the first time in my experience, which is almost 20 years that anyone has brought in a card, a thank you, something like this, because giving advice and prescriptions is, that's my job. And so I thought, my goodness, you know, just a simple thing like that. And so that's what I've been working on, gratitude. And boy, if you want to feel good yourself, just tell somebody thanks or how much you appreciate them or whatever, and it just comes rolling back in. And you two are the best examples I know of that. And Clay, you've, with your group, once again, you've led many of us to a different way of thinking. And we, in turn, and we've affected a lot of people, thousands.
It is. Ripples in the pond. And they continue to build. And Clay, as we're having you as the leader of this movement, being willing to go out, being willing to ask for support, being willing to say yes, that I'm going to take the lead here, yeah, and come, saddle up, let's go. Let's go together. And I am honored to be on this search of the new compassionate male with you. Thank you, Jack Frick. Thank you for this time today. Thank you, Clay Boykin, for who you are and for the love that you bring us all. And thank you, audience, for being with us. We will see you next time.